Hey, this is Gray Cook, and welcome to Gray Cook Radio, where I talk with my favorite publisher about the questions that we've generated from our work.
Gray, last week I missed an important follow-up question when we talked about breathing. You said when at rest, women tend to breathe more into the chest than men do. And I was wondering, does that mean it's optimal for them, or does it mean it's happening by bad habit? Is this something we should pay attention to, like belly breathing more when we're relaxing?
I don't know if we can really say if it's bad or good. I just know that as long as we know that when you're trying to recover, when you're trying to relax, when you're trying to optimize your performance, really focus on the nasal breathing. I would probably venture to say that one of the reasons culturally we see that here in the States is just that women are probably paying more attention to their posture and almost holding in their belly unconsciously. Guys really don't care. Just go down to the beach. They just let it all hang out. So it could just be a cultural thing from the samples that we've taken here, and it may have nothing to do with the authentic human state of breathing. It might have everything to do with just a cultural bias that women are going to just simply try to hold their trunk and torso in a more erect and flat appearance. But it is something that's been noted. I just thought I'd mention it. But everybody should be able to relax into a belly breath and breathe comfortably through their nose, both during moderate exercise and relaxation. And if they can't, then it's probably something you want to get checked out and at least get some explanations.
When you say that culturally and talking about holding in the stomach and stuff, which I can definitely relate to that, and I know that I can't belly breathe when I'm holding in my stomach, and it makes me think that this is a bad habit and something that I should learn to relax into. Is that what you're saying, or you're not quite saying that?
You can probably belly breathe. Unless you're wearing spandex, you can belly breathe and no one will know it. But I think probably we're so hypersensitive sometimes that we don't. So belly breathing doesn't have to be this drastic thing. I know that the fellows in the Tour de France have been practicing it for a while. And some of the snapshots as they zoom by, if you catch it at the right time, it looks like they're this unbelievably ripped up fit athlete with 3% body fat and a beer gut. And that's them crouched over, but still really making room for that belly breath, even though they're in a flexed over position. But the subtle breath into your belly should almost be, imagine if I took a belt and put it around the lower part of your rib cage, probably about 2 inches below where you got a normal bra strap or a bikini strap, and try to breathe without putting extra tension on that. And that will bypass some of the rib movement altogether and get you more into the up and down motion of the diaphragm instead of the rib cage out and in. So just that little bit of feedback, or just have somebody place their hands behind you as if they were going to lift you up onto a pull-up bar or something, but just don't breathe into their hands, and you'll bypass it down and see that we're not even talking, in many cases, an inch of movement in and out to get the belly breath. It's more practice the absence of the neck and upper shoulder and upper chest breath, and by doing that, you'll automatically have more of a belly breath.
In Feldenkrais, what they do is something called a seesaw breath, and it's a belly breath, then the next one is a chest, and it's back and forth like in a seesaw action, one and then the other and one and the other. And they actually, after you get that, then they do it in side-lying, or they'll do it even directing the breath to different places, like to the low back, or to the right and to the left and things like that. Have you done anything like that?
Absolutely, and that's the brilliance in Feldenkrais work, because they're not just trying to jump on one aspect of breathing. What I think they're trying to do is just increase your awareness of all the different possibilities that you have. And by doing that, you'll realize some are familiar and some are very unfamiliar. And so if the chest breath cycle is very easy for you, but the lower breath cycle is not, you just had an aha moment. Had we only tried to practice one, you wouldn't get to see the interplay between the fact that one is a subconscious activity and one is a very conscious activity. And I think that's important. So just like when we explore the pelvic cloth, or going all the way around, say moving your pelvis into anterior tilt, posterior tilt, left rotation, right rotation, you start to find things that are absent or are places that you can't go. And just by acknowledging that, you're halfway there. And I think that's a great way to teach is let you default to your comfort area, but then take you somewhere, default you back, instead of just 5 minutes of concentrating on trying to relax and breathing. We'd probably be pretty counterproductive.
You know, another follow-up I missed during the same conversation was you slid in a little comment there about heart rate variability, and not too many people are talking about that. Can you explain that to us in layman's terms?
First of all, let me just make a quick prediction here. They will be. I still remember the day I called Perform Better Catalog and talked to Chris Poirier and said, you think you could get me some kettlebells? He said, yeah, we have them over in the track and field section. We only have like the shot putter guys order those, but I think I could find some somewhere. They weren't on any page in Perform Better Catalog, and now you have a hard time turning three pages without seeing them. So our awareness of this kind of thing is going to heighten. Heart rate variability is, and I'm going to really simplify it, is the fact that your heart rate does not have this consistent thump like you think. The time space between each of those beats varies greatly. Since each of those spaces is only about a second at rest, you can't see the difference, but a very quick meter can. When we are in our parasympathetic system or our rest and digest or our safe place, our heart rate variability is all over the place. We have two beats that are somewhat close together, two that are far apart, then these three do one thing. And in the minute, you still might be at 60 beats per minute, but it's not rhythmical at all. It's very arrhythmical. And that's a system that's ready to adapt and respond, and it's not in any stress. Whereas if we start imposing stress, we think the only stress response we can have is increase in heartbeats. But there are a lot of other stress responses that you can have. You can shallow breathe. You can have vasoconstriction. And one of the things that happens when we're under stress is your body immediately diverts blood from your gut in your vital organs and puts blood out in your extremities. It's time to get in a fight or have some flight, run away. And it is a very primal instinct that when you have stress to do that. In our modern society, we have mental and emotional stress all the time, and we have to impose physical stress just to stay in shape. Our forefathers lived in a physically stressful environment, but probably knew how to relax a little bit better than we do. What we've got with heart rate variability is by not just looking at how many beats per minute, but how the beats behave within a minute, we can get a sample of how stressed out you are. And there are even products out now that can tell you, is today a day to train? Is today a day to maybe go light and practice the finer points of an activity that you aren't too good at but need to get better at, but don't really call it a workout, call it more training? And then, is this a day to rest? Your heart rate variability can predict that, because if you've had a good night's sleep and you're still in a small amount of stress, compounding that probably isn't the thing that's going to make you fitter. Recovering better is. The strength coaches that I work with in the NFL are very aware of this fact. And they probably go heavy and hard less days than your average gym rat does, because they understand the one thing the gym rat doesn't, that being in the gym is not the problem, but maxing out every day is the surefire way to reduce your maxes, not increase them. So hit it hard, then back off. If your system can handle it hard again, that's fine, but we don't have many tools or experts in our back pocket to tell us that. So by default, if we have a choice to do more or less, half the country does less, half the country does more, and usually each should be doing the opposite. This is just one more meter, one more metric or number we can put on the body to really dial in some aspects of our training habits and really get precision in your recovery, just like we're doing precision in our nutrition and our hydration and our workout. There's no precision in our recovery. We either feel like crap or we don't, but it doesn't matter. If this is the hole in my schedule that I'm going to work out, I'm going to hit it. And if I feel bad, I should probably punish myself for feeling bad instead of trying to figure out why I'm not completely recovered, you know?
Are you saying that the heart rate variability is more effective than just checking daily resting heart rate?
Absolutely. It's the same concept taken to much greater precision. When your resting heart rate is elevated in the morning, that can also be an indicator that you're still in a state of repair, or you might have a low-grade fever or some degree of stress and might have just woken up from a really, really bad dream. But the variability is more precise, and some of the tools out there can literally indicate to you, depending on where you are, which way you should train. Whereas if your heart rate, your resting heart rate is simply elevated in the morning, you really don't know what to do. Is this elevated enough to worry about? Should I lay out? Should I just go light? Is it a yoga day? You know, it is an indicator, but it's a very old tool, and the new tool gives us more precision. Here's why. The new tool can also give you feedback while you're working out, when you finish a workout, and in your rest breaks, because when we teach you how to recover between a set, we can do things and watch your heart rate variability real time. So I can put you into a mindset, into a ritual that literally shaves seconds or even minutes off your recovery, which in an athletic situation, that's awesome. In a workout situation, it gets you a better set next time. Why waste a set? Did you wait too long? Did you rush to it too early? So the heart rate variability is such a precise tool. With a heart rate monitor, you can pretty much do this real time while you're training. Do it first thing in the morning. Do it on a recovery day. You could get a lot of feedback. This used to cost thousands of dollars. Now it's built into some of the heart rate monitors that I've seen at Polar. I think the FT80 model factors that in, and it actually it's more of a weightlifting watch than a cardio watch, meaning hit it, and then you hit this point and it says recover. And the minute you recover at least enough to be acceptable, it says hit it again. That's pretty good feedback from a watch, but it's not just doing that based on your heart rate. I'm pretty sure that the people I've worked with there have told me it's factoring in heart rate variability. Higher level watches, you can sit there and watch a heart rate variability graph, and there's even an iPhone application out called iAthlete. Basically, it's the word athlete, drop the A, add an I, and it'll baseline your heart rate variability first thing in the morning for you. I don't think it's a real-time feedback tool, but, you know, all these things, I'm pretty sure come in under $500 or even less with some products. As the price comes down, the popularity, application, and usage will go up, and it's just another chunk of technology, if used right, can help us embrace ancient wisdom. I think our forefathers knew their bodies much better than we do, so they were probably doing the right thing by default. We need to get back in tune, probably, but if the device helps, then it helps.
Well, I guess we'll all be talking about that more in the future. Thanks. Let's talk again next week.
Okay.